Welcome to Respond to Resilience. Along with Bonnie Rumely, I'm your host, David Dashinger. On this episode, we'll be speaking with Jacques Roy, captain in the Stamford, Connecticut Fire Department, and Dawn Roy, LCSW, about trauma in the fire service, peer support, mental health, and the birth of the Fairfield County Trauma Response Team. We'll be back right after this. In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Respond to Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Rumely, LCSW EMTB. And we'd like to welcome our guests to this very special episode of Respond to Resilience. Before we get started with our conversation, I'll read their bios. Dawn Roy is a licensed clinical social worker, otherwise known as LCSW, and holds an approved clinical supervisor, ACS credential, and is a certified mental health first aid instructor. Dawn has a background assisting first responders, having provided trauma treatment using EMDR and other related evidence-based treatment modalities following numerous traumatic events, earning the respect of these first responders who are generally hesitant to seek help. Dawn is well-versed with the sensitive nature of emergency services work. She also currently maintains a private practice in Fairfield, Connecticut, and is a member of the Fairfield County Trauma Response Team, a team of licensed, seasoned trauma therapists trained in EMDR and disaster response. Jacques Roy has 27 years of service with the Stamford Fire Department and 13 years as a captain. He's a coordinator for the Stamford Fire Department support team and a member of the Connecticut Firefighter Peer Support Network. Welcome to Respond to Resilience, Dawn and Jacques.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.
So we'll get the conversation started. Bonnie, if you'd like to ask them the first question.
Yeah, thank you both for being here. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And Dawn, always a pleasure to be your colleague.
Likewise.
So we both, thank you. We both belong to the Fairfield County Trauma Response Team together, but it would be great for you to talk with our viewers a little bit about what our team is and how it began.
So I definitely answer that, but I know Jacques has a version of that as well. It was kind of a both of us, you know, behind how the Fairfield County Trauma Response Team began. Back in 2011, there were a group of clinicians that were trained in EMDR work and trauma work that were looking to form something called a trauma recovery network. At the time, there were only three of those, roughly three to five in the country. Now, at present, there's well over 35. The trauma recovery networks are response teams of specialized clinicians that respond to different disasters. And in our local area, in Lower Fairfield County, there had not yet been a need for that. I'm sure there was, but at any rate, there were a group of clinicians. And on Christmas Day, 2011, December 25, there was a five fatality incident, a very significant fire where a set of grandparents and three young children died. And my husband, who happens to be Jacques, was part of that, along with roughly 70 other firefighters from Stamford Fire Department. And really, the unfortunate thing that happened was there was no response. Their incident commander at the time was on the scene and saw that his members were really, really struggling and was reaching out to various different mental health services. It takes a lot for first responders to ask for help for mental health assistance. There was virtually no response that day. It was Christmas, and every turn was a door slammed in his face. And really, I received a call on that day at roughly around 11 a.m., as I recall, from my husband and from the incident commander at the time, asking for help. And so really, it was that incident that gave birth, if you will, to our team. We had responded that day, and then in the immediate days following, when there was a need for some critical incident, you know, stress management and debriefing, and immediate mental health care. And then a year later, you know, was Sandy Hook, and our team really was thrust into action again. And that was really the birth of our Fairfield County Trauma Response Team. We had recognized a massive gap in mental health services, quality, accessible, immediate response. And so that's really, we've spent the last 10 years really working hard to understand the unique culture of first responders and making sure we were delivering what they needed. That's a long answer. I apologize. I was trying to give you the full response.
No, that was a full response. And I think it's important to give the full setup, because it really was all of those things all combined. So thank you for doing that, Dawn.
Yeah.
Well, Captain, to add to that perspective, what was your experience in terms of the uniqueness of the fire culture, asking for help, and becoming aware that we're actually experiencing a problem with mental health?
I really, to be honest, didn't see it as a problem. And when I first met my wife, and her being in the line of work that she is, from time to time she would ask me, and she would say, you know, does anything from work bother you? And, you know, my answer was really, I mean, you know, things are, we see a lot of unpleasant things, but nothing that really affected me off the job or that I brought home with me. And I mean, it's a lot different when you're 25 years old or 20, you know, or late 20s and you don't have any children. But at the time of this incident, you know, we had two boys roughly the same age as the three fatalities. And, you know, it really hit me. This call affected me. And I like to think I'm pretty open-minded, and you know, even before I was affected, I don't think I would shame someone for feeling like they needed help. You know, I would never do that. You know, but once I was really going down the hole, I was like, wow. You know, I can't believe it's me. Like, I'm the last guy I thought that would really, you know, really be affected. And that's when it really opened my eyes. Like, this is real. This is a real issue.
Do you think that's unique to Jacques, Dawn, or do you see that across your line of work with first responders, what he just described?
It's not unique to him, I don't think. You know, a lot of first responders that I've known personally and professionally, you know, would definitely say that, you know, some of the very similar things that they've, you know, put up with a lot, you know, over the course of their career, and then something happens, and now they say, oh my God, it's me. And I think the good news, and probably what we've seen, the great news in the last 10 years, is such an incredible movement of more and more first responders really being open, you know, about what they're struggling with and not feeling that shame around. And, you know, there'll always be some stigma, of course, but there's just such a transition, just a shift really in many of these men and women, you know, talking about their experiences and you know, being okay with saying that I'm not okay. Which is,
if I could just add, I agree 100%, and I'm sure all of you have noticed the change in the last 10, 15 years. Mental health for all first responders is a very frontline issue, and it's nice to see it's being addressed.
Yes, and I give credit also to the Fairfield County Trauma Response Team for their outreach, because up until your team came to our department, the only thing we knew about mental health services was EAP, and that opened the door. Your presentation opened the door to a number of different options, and now I hear the phrase EMDR like almost every week, right? It's become very
a full name.
Yes, it's accepted, and people rave about it. So I think once the word starts to spread and we kind of crack through that wall, people are really interested in, you know, the benefits.
If I could just say, like, something that's unique, I think, too, about our team is that, you know, we really, there is not competition or any of that. We really have the best interest of the first responders at heart. You know, we're really a very genuine, hardworking group of people, essentially volunteers, when we do the work that we do, you know, we just are there really genuinely for the responders, and just want them to have immediate care, you know, and accessible. So
I think what our team stands for too, it's amazing how when something happens, that's when change occurs, right? So I view that fire that Jacques and you describe, it was the turning point, and it was the door opening for so many people, not just in that department, but for so many people in this area to get helped and to finally come out of the shadows and get what they needed. And that's just so glaring, I think, just sitting here listening to both of you talk.
You mentioned that your department received the presentation. It's roughly a 90-minute presentation that the team presents to various first responder groups. To go back how that formed, I'm not sure if the team was already in the process of developing a presentation or not, but we had a bad day in Stanford. We had three fatalities, and we had some guys on three separate incidents, and we had a couple of guys reach out for our EAP. And unfortunately, you know, they got a response, you know, we can get you in next Thursday. And it's like, for one of our guys to reach out for help, they need immediate attention. You know, it is a 911 call.
Yeah, exactly.
And when that happened, myself and a couple of other firemen that had done EMDR and saw members of the Fairfield team, we went to our training division and we said, listen, we want to do a presentation to the entire department on trauma and what's available, treatment, and what have you. And you saw one version of that, because I'm sure that it's changed over the years. But we were, you know, hoping just to pick up a couple, three guys that maybe were struggling. And at the time, we had, I think, 250 members, and we had like 15 right off the bat, like 15 people reach out for help. And it was amazing. We're like, wow, you know, that's hard to believe. And what happened, you know, then it was kind of word of mouth. Like, I have a buddy that works in Norwalk, and the next thing you know, that the team presented in Norwalk, and it just kind of mushroomed. And that's how we got to Ridgefield, or they got to Ridgefield. Mm-hmm. And
right.
Yeah, it's been pretty amazing to watch.
Do you think, I know your background, Jacques, in peer support and being involved in that for your department. So how did this scenario with the Christmas Day fire and the trauma team, how did that all lead you into the peer support realm?
Well, again, I had struggles with this incident, the Christmas fire, and I accessed our EAP, and unfortunately, they didn't offer specialized treatment. So I did traditional talk therapy with like a general practitioner therapist, and if anything, it made it worse, until the point my wife, she was suggesting I went and saw a therapist, but I was like, I'm trying, I'm going to therapy. But finally I hit a breaking point and I went and I did EMDR and I couldn't believe how effective it was. And so I was like, how come we don't know about this? How come we don't know about this? And referred a couple of other guys I knew that were struggling, and they had the same success. So if we play it forward a few years ago, a few years forward, it was like, all right, well, we should have a peer support team. And even nationally, it was just, that was really starting to grow. But I mean, it was obviously something that I wanted to be a part of, because I had seen, while we didn't formally have a team, some of the guys that had done EMDR, some of the first, the first guys were, we were kind of doing it anyway. Guys were reaching out to us about how was this experience? How does it work? Who do I need to contact? So that was the next step, was, all right, let's get a formal peer support team. And I like to think, COVID slowed everything down. I think it's worked pretty well, our peer team.
Well, let's get a little deeper into the peer support topic. And before we take a quick break, Dawn, could you just explain a little bit about EMDR, what it is, how it works?
Sure. I'm just going to tell you the full name of it is just, it's a mouthful. It stands for Eye Movement Desensitization Reprocessing. Yeah, it's a long mouthful title, but it is a trauma-based modality, if you will. It was developed in roughly 1987 by a clinical psychologist, Dr. Francine Shapiro, and really the lay version of the basis of EMDR is that she discovered, it was like a chance observation, that rapid eye movements, she herself was focusing on something disturbing in her life. She has a history of cancer. She has since passed away. But she discovered that eye movement was something that naturally occurred during REM sleep, and the bilateral stimulation, which is the eye movement of right-left, activates the right and left side of the brain, which really helps an individual while they're conscious digest, if you will, or reprocess traumatic memory. So if you sort of imagine that trauma is locked in one part of the brain, and in that has, sights and sounds and smells and, a negative thought or an emotion or a body sensation, and those traumatic pieces or fragments are stuck. When you do EMDR, you're unsticking something, you're moving that traumatic fragment to a different place, almost like the brain is a filing cabinet. And you're moving it to another part of the brain that's more adaptive, more healthy. So if I'm in a car accident, let's say, and I never had a problem driving in a car before, and now I get in the car after the car accident, and my hands start to sweat, and I have this thought in my head that just keeps going, like, I'm in danger, I'm in danger. After successful EMDR treatment, I now no longer have those sensations and I no longer have that negative belief I'm in danger. And Bonnie is well aware of it. We can certainly add, but that's, you know, that's just an explanation. But we use bilateral stimulation to really help a person reprocess different traumatic memories. And I always tell people to think broadly about trauma because it's trauma relative to the person, if that makes sense. You know, disturbing memories are disturbing memories. That can be anything. That could be falling off your bike, you know, it could be anything.
And I think in the responder community, it's that scenario where you could have a number of different people responding to the same scene and everybody has a completely different experience or activation sometimes from that particular call. So let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue talking about the trauma response team and peer support. We're back speaking with Captain Jacques Roy of Stanford Fire Department and Dawn Roy, LCSW, and my colleague, Bonnie Rumeli. Bonnie, why don't you lead off with the next question?
I wanted to go back to what Dawn was saying right before we took a break, and I wanted Jacques to comment on this, but a lot of people and a lot of first responders, when they come into my office, they're fearful. You know, like, what are you going to do to my brain? Are you going to erase something? And I thought it would be great to have you speak to that a little bit. You know, in your experience, what happens to the disturbance that's associated with the memory? And then how does that go away over time? If you could explain that to your fellow first responders.
All right. To my fellow first responders, just super quick. And one of the reasons why I found it so beneficial is it made sense to me when it was explained to me, you know, roughly how EMDR works, very primitive level. I had done talk therapy and it didn't help at all. If anything, it made me worse. And when I went to EMDR and Dawn mentioned the bilateral stimulation, the therapist I had asked me, says, do you practice EMS as well? Yes. Do you understand different parts of the brain, you know, have different functions? Yes. She said, well, look at it this way. You have two sides of your brain. And, you know, one is the emotive side. And that's obviously how you process things emotionally, your feelings and what have you. And then you have a cognitive side. And that's more logic and think things through. All right. When I speak to other firefighters, I always use the example of my kid fails a test at school. Right. I get angry. I'm upset. All right. But why did it happen? All right. You know, maybe he needs reading glasses. Maybe he needs a tutor. Maybe he needs to get his cell phone taken away. Well, you understand. And she asked me, she says, do you understand? I said, yeah, I get it. Totally. And she says, well, what happens in a life-threatening or traumatic situation often is you have to suppress your emotions and you have to problem solve, right? In order to survive. And she says, do you understand that? And it hit me. That's our job in a nutshell, right? When someone calls 911, it's not an emergency for us, right? It should be business as usual. Like, hold your emotions down and problem solve. That's why people are calling us. And she said, well, when you do that and you suppress your emotions at a bad scene or wherever, what happens is you can end up not processing the odor, the image, the things that Dawn mentioned. And they basically just get locked up and you never get the chance to process them emotionally. So when you do EMDR with the bilateral stimulation and you go through these targets, these images or whatever they are, and all it does is the stimulation allows the emotive side to process the incident, right? Firefighter level stuff. I'm talking to my brothers and sisters. And then, you know, once you process it, it just moves into your long-term memory, the filing cabinet that Dawn mentioned. And no longer does it bring, you know, your heart race, you know, no longer does it all of a sudden in the middle of the day at no, for no apparent reason, you see an image, you know, you kind of, you don't forget it. It just doesn't elicit an emotional response. Fair enough. Good enough.
That's a great way to explain it. So what you can't erase the memory. You can recall the memory if someone asks you, but you don't have the level of disturbance in your body, or you're not showing the signs and symptoms that you were when it initially hit you.
Absolutely. And you know, you almost have to consciously think or look back at the incident. It's not
right.
Coming at you all the time, right. Which, you know, can is what I experienced.
Well, Dawn, jumping back to the trauma response team, what actually happens when somebody contacts the team?
So there's a couple of different ways or reasons why a first responder or an organization would contact us. So I think I have a sense of what you're looking for, but I'm going to give you a few different scenarios. So we get, we get contacted to provide, as Jock had mentioned, that trauma presentation. And David, it sounds like the presentation you've seen. We do receive requests to come into various different departments and to essentially educate first responders on what duty-induced trauma is and how, you know, really to look at, is this happening for you? And if so, here are the resources. And here's a vetted list of clinicians. In the event, right, you know, be prepared, not necessarily when you're in a crisis. So that's one scenario is our going out and giving them that information so they have it when and if they are triggered. And also in that presentation, we talk a lot about what is EMDR and, you know, just making them aware of different resources. Another time that we get called in is to do type of response or debriefing or support. You know, we've been asked to be present after line of duty deaths or suicides in, you know, a particular department or just any type, you know, particular incident, different bad calls where, you know, the type of, you know, critical incident stress management scenario, so to speak. So that's another reason why we would be called. Another example of when and what I think you're probably looking for is for treatment, right? So there's different ways that people access the Fairfield County Trauma Response Team. We have a website with an email where a response is given to if someone reaches out for help themselves or on behalf of another first responder. One of our three coordinators will respond within 24 hours and assign that member to a clinician who is able to take them as soon as they need to be seen. Is that's answering your question?
Right? Yes, great answer.
Yeah. That's what you're looking for, okay.
Yeah, you covered everything.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
There's one other thing. Very recently, Dawn and I were asked to give a different kind of a presentation, and we really, really enjoyed doing it. It was actually a presentation to a bunch of promoted firefighters. So it was talking to them before they started their new role as captain or assistant chief or lieutenant. So it was a very interesting presentation because we talked about trauma, we talked about what our team does, but then we talked to them really about how do you support your own people. And we shared a lot of advice and strategies that we've used over time when we go into departments. And because of our knowledge with the first responder cultures, gave them a lot of really neat tips. So I would imagine we're going to be doing that presentation again in the future. It was phenomenal. And yeah. I have to say, I was so impressed by that department and that chief to have the foresight to think of it and say, wow, I have these 20 new leaders. What do I want them to know? And this was on his top list.
The other, I think one of the really important things too that we stressed was that just because you're a leader doesn't mean you're above your own things, right? And that it is so important and critical that you be mindful of your own limits, right? As an officer, and walk the walk, right? You know, not that you have to share all of your confidential information, but that it's just so important that you're aware of your own limits and your own mental health needs. And so that's one of the things we really try to drive home and making them be mindful of taking care of themselves.
Yeah, it's a huge contribution to leadership development, and I'm so impressed with that. And I'm hoping there's more of that, more departments adopt that as part of their post-promotion process. And even pre-promotion process, it would across the board would be so helpful. Well, Jacques, let's jump back to peer support and talk a little bit about how it works. What's the mechanics of it in your department? What do people do when they need that help? What are the resources that are available?
The way our team was picked, originally, is we put out a survey to the entire department. Who would you feel comfortable discussing a personal problem with? It was a one question survey. And that's how we came up with our list. And the good part about that is, there's someone for everyone. There's very senior people and there's younger people and there's different ranks. And, you want your peer team to represent the department. And you want people that they trust. And we always tell our peer team, you don't have to trust all 18 members. You need to trust one or two. That's how our team was picked. Then we receive training and we do ongoing training. Our clinical director is a member of the Fairfield County team. So certainly if we ever have any questions, we bounce ideas off her. She points us in the right direction. And all the team and all our contact numbers are posted in all the firehouses. They're posted on the our department web page. If someone wants to reach, and everyone kind of knows who's on the team anyway. So, they can always reach out and they have. And if they just need to talk, one-on-one with another firefighter if that's enough, that's enough. And if they, feel that they need to, seek professional help, that's what's so great is, our peer support team has been trained and our clinical director is a member of the team. If it's something trauma related, and we can point them, we can make good, solid referrals. So that's how it works.
Is there a group component to it or is it primarily one-to-one?
It can be a group. Traditionally it's one-to-one. Hmm. I could think of a couple of instances where, someone reached out to a couple members. But traditionally, most of the time, it's one-to-one.
Some other examples of what peer support team members do, they'll locate and they'll, on behalf of the member, if they're struggling and they need to, for example, go to a facility for whatever reasons, they will help navigate that process on behalf of the member and in some cases actually physically go with the member while they're going through their admission process.
Great. We're going to take another break. We'll be right back talking more about peer support trauma response team after this.
Our mission at Responder Wellness, Inc. is to subsidize or provide free of charge safety equipment and wellness services to first responders, including police officers, firefighters, EMS personnel, and 911 operators throughout Connecticut. Resources include scholarships to train new EMTs, a responder and veteran-only AA group in Danbury, Connecticut, as well as police vests, a fire and EMS boot program, yoga classes, gym memberships, and t-shirts. The founder of Responder Wellness, Inc. co-leads a peer support group sponsored by Fairfield County Trauma Response Team. Responder Wellness, Inc. is a nonprofit 501c3. Find us on the web at responderwellness.org, on Facebook at Responder Wellness, Inc., or email us, responderwellness@gmail.com. Responder Wellness, Inc., putting responders first.
I was wondering, Jacques, could you talk a little bit about your experience and how it makes you a better peer support team leader? Do you feel like when people come to you, it gives you an easier sense of when you need to refer them out, and because you can draw on your own experience and say, look, I've had EMDR or I've struggled, it puts you in a better position to help them?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's, you know, I didn't read it in a book, you know, I went through it. So, I can't say I understand everything that somebody might be experiencing, but at least some of it. And, I think it also helps, develop a trust. You know, it's almost, I'll show you your mine if you show me yours, you know, and, mm-hmm. and being upfront, and this is what I experienced, it kind of opens the door and allows them to open up, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Great. Dawn, in terms of the trauma response team and what we're seeing out there, do you work with people in the community beyond firefighters, EMS and police, and who are those people and what kind of mental health challenges are they experiencing?
While the team's mission is to, you know, the primary mission is to support first responders in providing the mental health care for them, I think what we've seen over the course of 10 years is that term is more broadly looked at. So, you know, the two biggest examples that come to mind, the first being Sandy Hook, you know, we saw first responders as some of the faith-based people that were really involved, heavily involved in that incident. We saw other therapists in that category that were either working or living in that community. And so one of the biggest efforts there was to provide therapy for the therapists that were doing a lot of the work, you know, and again, impacted heavily by, again, working or living in that area. Mm-hmm. There were other first responders, even while you wouldn't necessarily think of them as first responders, but, you know, educators and teachers, you know, who were on the front lines in that incident. So those were, you know, we availed ourselves to a larger group of people in that category. And then during COVID, it really became incredibly obvious how much the medical field, you know, people who were working on the front lines in, you know, hospitals and just all areas were first responders and not getting, you know, the help really that they needed. So our team, you know, definitely widened our net, so to speak, in terms of being providing services for a larger pocket of people.
I have an additional point. Our team also sponsors a weekly peer support team meeting on Fridays. And we have had so many different first responders. It's not just police, fire, EMS, and dispatch. We've got animal control. We have corrections. You know, we've had FBI, CIA in our team. So when you think of all of the people that get to a difficult incident first, they're the ones who really are first responders. And I remember the first time we met an animal control officer who arrived on our meeting. And at first, you know, we were just curious, oh, what brought you here? And what this person had to share was so eye-opening, even to me as a professional. You know, do you realize how much we've had to see all of the animal cruelty and everything that this person had witnessed in a 30 or 40 year career? And it just, this light bulb goes off in you as a therapist, and you realize, wow, first responders are in so many different avenues. You know, even train conductors or tow truck drivers, you think of what they have to pull up on and see, just like we all do. So I think that one thing I'm proud of is our team is very, very inclusive. And I think that we try to think outside the box and we try to include anyone that we think is really impacted. And like Dawn said, during COVID, it became so clear to us that medical professionals were struggling big time. And our group did quite a lot for that, not just referrals, but for groups and things like that to local hospitals. So it's important to, it's not just police and fire, EMS and dispatch. There's a lot more of them out there. So we have to remember them and get them to listen to these podcasts too.
Well, as we wrap up, Dawn and Jacques, thank you so much for being here with us and telling us about what you have experienced and what you are up to. It's really, really powerful. And I think it's so important that we're all spreading this information and making it possible for people to consider other options besides, you know, just doing business as usual. Is there any projects or courses or any kind of offerings you have you'd like to share?
We're definitely, now that I'm not going to say COVID is over or anything like that, but now that there's more opportunity for in-person trainings and people are having some comfort level to sit in a room together, we will be offering a peer support training in the middle of March 2022. Our team is going to sponsor that, and that peer support training is for any first responder, police, fire, EMS, essentially, who would like to go through that. And if they have additional members from their department that would like to join their team, or perhaps they're starting a new team. So we're going to be offering that opportunity in the spring.
Okay. And what's the best way for people to find out about that?
They can send an email to our website, Fairfield County Trauma Response Team. If they go onto the website, they can inquire if they're interested in becoming trained. And I think we would probably open that up even to neighboring areas. You know, if somebody in Westchester, you know, just over the line really decided they wanted to come, it really is going to be an open training.
Great. Thank you. Jacques, anything else you wanted to add?
You know, a lot of times there's this idea that PTSD isn't treatable, that, you know, you're stuck with it. And you know, for my brothers and sisters, you know, that's not the case. I mean, there is effective treatment, and you know, if you're not willing to do it for yourself, you know, do it for your spouse or your children or whatever, because, you know, when you're not right, you're not right at home either. So, you know, if you think you might need help, go get help. And, you know, everyone around you will be happier.
Well, thank you both again for being here. Want to encourage everybody to like and subscribe on YouTube, the Responder Resilience channel, and on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc. page. Bonnie, thank you for being your amazing interviewing self, and we look forward to seeing you again on the next episode.
Okay. So everyone, thank you all.
Yeah. Stay safe and be kind to yourself.
Take care.